You ready for some coffee, honey?
Absolutely.
I'll pour.
Great coffee. I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli.
And I'm Linda Martinelli.
And we are Talking
While Married.
Rural Americans are bad people who've made bad decisions, and they deserve to live uncomfortable lives. This nostalgia for some imagined pastoral way of life is stupid, and we should shame people who aren't pro-city. It should be uncomfortable to live in rural America. Their medical care, their gas, and their taxes should all be higher as punishment for living in rural America.
Wow.
Where do you think that came from?
Well, I know it didn't come from you.
Well, it came from a UC Berkeley instructor who's a graduate student in doctoral studies in philosophy, and his name is Jackson Kernion from the University of California in the People's Republic of Berkeley. But, and by the way, that tweet was soon,
deleted.
Deleted. Yeah. Thank you.
I think because he would rightfully get a lot of pushback on that. And, you know, what's interesting about that tweet, which is, oh my gosh, it just speaks to me of somebody that has no idea of what Middle America is and lives in an alternate universe than what most people in America live in.
Well, he's a city boy. And you know what's interesting about this guy, and you're right, he got a tremendous amount of pushback, and even from other academics that found him to be tedious and boring, because he posts, I guess he's involved in doctoral studies, so he's posting some of the stuff from his doctoral dissertation through social media, and people are just saying, this guy is an embarrassment. This is, I mean,
I'm bored to tears,
right? But the thing that, there's so many things that bother me about this on so many levels. You know, he's talking about people in rural America. He's talking about flyover states. He's talking about middle America. So I get onto his social media, and I'm just looking. I didn't put anything in it, but I'm looking, and literally all the photographs he has, like, on Facebook and Twitter are of him in guess what kind of places? Rural places.
Okay. Well, are they rural places up by Berkeley, or are they really middle America places?
Oh no, they're pictures of him in other area, in other countries, but they're all rural areas. There's not one photograph that I found where he has vacationed or visited another major metropolitan area. Okay? So here's a city boy that stays in the city, that puts people down, that lives in rural America, and where do you think he vacations? He vacations in rural areas. I just found that so hypocritical.
Well, and that, there you go. And that's the word, is that hypocrisy, you know, reigns supreme these days. So here's what I have to say.
Go ahead,
Ron. You and I are on the road again, and we are on the road right now at the world finals of the Professional Bull Riding Association. We have one of our bucking bulls here, and unfortunately, he didn't fare too awfully well, didn't fare too badly
just
either.
Just one spot out of the money. You know.
But that's fine. He made it here, and we're happy about that. But here's what I see here that I always is fascinating. This, if you come to NFR or if you come to PBR.
Well, NFR being National Rodeos Finals.
Yeah, National Finals Rodeos. Yes, and there's thousands of people that come into town from where? Rural America.
And flyover states.
Yeah, from all over the place. And the thing that I notice and that I love. And by the way, we have a friend who came in from California, had never seen an event like this, and came in from the city, right?
Yeah,
Lives
in Southern California.
And, she has the same impression that we always have about the kind of people and the kind of event. And so here's my comment to this particular, I don't even know if he's a professor or
he's
a
not.
Wannabe
no,
professor.
No, he's a graduate student. Okay. What happens with graduate students is they just let him teach classes.
Okay, well, and they shouldn't. But anyway, the people here, what I notice that strikes me about his statement is talking about how rural Americans are, what did he say?
He called us bad people.
Okay, bad people. Okay.
That deserve to have an uncomfortable life.
Okay, because we live in rural America.
Because we're not pro-city.
Okay, well, it's not that we're not pro-city. It's just that we happen to love that rural lifestyle, which I love, and lived in the city for, you know, a million years myself, but wouldn't go back ever. So here's the thing that I notice. You and I travel all over the world, but in lots of cities, lots of big cities, and I could sit here and you could sit here and name all the big cities around the country we travel in, but let's just say that it's virtually every big city in every state at some point in time, you know, we've been. So, you know, the New Yorks and the Baltimores. So all the big cities you want to name. Here, and in the rural places where we go, Tulsa, Oklahoma, different places where we go, I have to say that the people that he's talking about that are bad people are happier people than the people in the cities. If you look around us here at this event with thousands of people from different areas, we've met people from Indiana, from Alaska, from I mean, you name the state, and they're here, and they talk to each other. We sit in the coffee shop and we see how everybody communicates with each other, not just at their own table where they're smiling and they're talking to one another, but they talk to other people all the time.
And those people that bring their families, like their kids, they're mm-hmm. not into their cell phones. The kids aren't into their cell phones. They're engaged with the family and the family
members.
Oh,
absolutely. And the thing is that I would say that these people look and live happier than what this person is talking about. When we travel to places like New York, which we'll be there shortly, and when we travel to places, cities that we love, I mean, we love the cities of New York, we love Chicago, we love different cities, but I will not say that the people there seem to be as happy and as self-assured and as engaged in life as I see the people from Middle America.
Yeah, you know, we see a lot of stress in the people that live in the big cities. Because living in the big cities, you know, there's ups and downs about living in the big cities, okay? And we have both lived in big cities. Even, you know, I've had a ranching life my whole life. I've also lived in the big city, and I've worked in the big cities. And there are just the stresses of getting from point A to point B. That's a huge stressor. You know, the traffic and the congestion in the cities.
The crime.
The huge amount of crime in the cities. People are very indifferent in the cities. They don't engage. They don't make eye contact. They're almost afraid to make eye contact with you. And when you move out to a rural area, from the city, the first thing that you have to learn is you got to decompress and you got to just do things slower because everybody around you is going a bit slower. And when we moved out to Texas, even though we lived out in a rural area, but we had to work all around the city, we had to personally had to just be cognizant of decompressing. And we've always been very gregarious and we engage with everybody, but we had to, like on the freeways in California just scare the bejesus out of you.
Yeah.
And the older you get, the more concerned about driving. You're not concerned about your driving. You're concerned about everybody that's speeding around you and cutting in front of you and doing all these crazy things. But it's just a different lifestyle. And this person, you know, Jackson Kernian, he's a person that you can tell has grown up and has been reared in the city his entire life. And so he's never been in the flyover states. He's never engaged with people like that. He's never lived there. So he doesn't understand the culture of Middle America. And that's for a person that would want to be a teacher, because that's what he's doing. Mm-hmm. Okay, he's teaching right now, and he's impressing upon other people. So he's impressing his ethics and his morality and his character and his core beliefs onto undergraduate students that aren't as informed, aren't as educated, or he might even be offended because we do have people from Middle America and flyover states that go to the University of California in Berkeley. It's just not all city people. And so it's just unfortunate And again, it's our educational system that doesn't do a proper vetting job and allows these people to go into classes with impressionable youth and manipulate them. And he knows he did wrong because he got major backlash. We both looked at his Twitter account, major backlash, and he took that tweet off, admitting that he'd made a mistake. But maybe that's, he's admitting to his other Twitter followers that he made a mistake, but I don't think he feels, based on what he said, I don't think he feels that that his belief in calling people from Middle America as bad people that deserve what they get is wrong. And to me, that's wrong.
Yeah, I agree with you. And again, you know, we go back to that conversation about who is it tolerant and intolerant? Is it the left or the right? Because all I see the intolerance all over the place. It's on the side of the left. It's not on the side of the right. It's just pretty crazy. I think that you were telling me about another professor or the person that took over Starbucks.
Yeah. Okay. So they have a new CEO of Starbucks, and she's a person of color, and she's come out and said that she doesn't like white people. Well, my God, I mean, take a look at any Starbucks. It's very diverse. You're going to find all sorts of people there in all socioeconomic backgrounds and all races and all cultures and all religions. This is not the type of person, an intolerant person against any race, is not the person that you would want to lead a multi-billion dollar transnational company like Starbucks. So I'm just absolutely amazed at the choices that corporate America makes in their leadership.
And, well, corporate America, government, everybody. But, you know, how would Starbucks fare if you reverse that and white people don't like Starbucks?
Well, see, and
that's just crazy. So why do you want to alienate this huge portion of your customers?
Yeah, you know, you're right. But to me, that's actually race discrimination. And I think there's been a lot of white people that have experienced reverse race discrimination. But rather than putting this thing in a racial issue or whatever, I want to get back to some core things here. And number one is that I don't care if it comes from the left or the right. It doesn't matter to me. What matters to me are people that are intolerant. And this country, for some reason, is just becoming more intolerant. It is becoming a society in America that is becoming more disparaged, more separated in a variety of ways. Racially, culturally, religiously, I mean, you name it, socioeconomically, politically, it is, there are these wide, chasms between us. And what I like about coming, and I'm going to bring it, circle back around to PBR, because professional bull riding is a national sport. Okay, it's a professional sport, just like Major League Baseball, the NFL, basketball, you name it. But the people that come to PBR are absolutely the salt of the earth. And the things that we see in PBR, and last night was a wonderful example, and I'll explain it. We pray before the event begins. We stand and we pray in mass, and we pray for the cowboys and the bullfighters, which are the safety officers, and we pray for the livestock.
Exactly.
Okay, that's the first thing we do. The next thing we do is we stand and we remove cover, which means we take our hats off, and we stand for the national anthem. And it's a big deal. There is not one single person anywhere in these tens of thousands of people that come to PBR that take a knee. There is no disrespect. You know that there's people there from all walks of life.
Yes.
And you know that there's Democrats there. And you know that there's liberal people there. And you
sure.
know that there's conservative people there. But the thing that I love about PBR and the culture is nobody takes a knee.
Well, and nobody is divided there.
No.
I mean, everybody really comes together. It's a beautiful sport to attend because of that. And not only do they pray, Ron, but in those prayers, they also ask for the safety of our military and our law enforcement officers, our first responders.
And that's where I'm going next. There is such a tremendous amount of respect for the military. There's tons and tons of veterans that go to PBR and belong to PBR, and also law enforcement. So last night, we had an officer from the Las Vegas Metro Police Department that was one of the first guys on the entry team into Mandalay Bay to confront Stephen Paddock, the mass murderer,
yes.
active shooter mm-hmm. mass murderer up on the 32nd floor. This guy was off duty. Okay, this guy was a member of the SWAT team, but he was off duty, but he had all of his assault gear in his car. And he turned around, he was heading home, he's off duty, and he turned around and came directly to Mandalay Bay, put his assault gear on over his civilian
clothes.
And grabbed a couple of more officers that were SWAT team members, and they breached entry. They ran, they got in that elevator, and they went up to that 32nd floor to take that guy on. Okay, with automatic weapons. And he was not armed with an automatic weapon. I think he only had a pistol. Okay, so you're against a guy with automatic weapons. And thank God that killer had killed himself.
Well, and they evacuated people on the floor.
And saved, and saved hundreds of people.
Right. So they honored him.
And a standing ovation.
Right.
Okay? And you do not, I'm sorry, you do not see that at Major League Baseball. You do not see that in the NFL. You do not see that in professional basketball. You don't see that in any other sport but PBR.
Right. And they honor Border Patrol.
That's a huge sponsor of PBR.
It's a huge sponsor. But not only that, it's a relationship that goes two ways, because Border Patrol loves PBR, but PBR loves Border Patrol. And the people that are here, there's lots of events that go on here for about a 10-day period,
right.
Culminating in the 5 days of the PBR World Finals. But there's a lot of other events going on. You
right.
have bullfighting. You have, and
mini
when
bulls.
When I say bullfighting, I don't mean where they hurt the bulls. These are the guys that end up being safety officers,
right.
helping the bull riders get off, and they have to learn how to kind of dance around a bull to make sure that they can get the bull away from the rider that's
exactly.
on the ground. So that's an art. It takes a lot, but they have competitions of their own,
right.
which is a lot of fun.
And if anybody gets hurt, it's the bullfighter.
It's the bullfighter, yeah, not the bull. Never the bull.
The bull's having a great time.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. But anyway, I just wanted to kind of bring that full circle. And for these graduate students, these instructors that are, you know, manipulating our youth, that you just have to stop being intolerant and start getting a life, okay? Because you're a hater, and I'm telling you what, Mr. Cardian, I can tell by your tweets that you're not a happy fella. You're just not.
And Middle America people are pretty darn happy, so you might want to take a lesson there.
That's it. You ready for a cup of coffee?
I am.
I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli.
And I'm Linda Martinelli.
As former law enforcement officers, we know that your life and the lives of those you love and work with can change in an instant when you encounter an active shooter.
Unfortunately, in today's world of uncertainty, encountering an armed active shooter can have deadly consequences. That's why the key to survival is training and preparedness.
And that's why we want to invite our listeners to seriously consider taking our Response to Active Shooter training course.
Violence can happen to you anytime and anywhere, and when you least expect it. Having a response and survival plan and engaging it can be the difference between life and death for you or a family member.
Our Response to Active Shooter courses are customized for the corporate, school, church, restaurant, and small business environment at a reasonable budget that fits your needs.
So don't put this life-saving training off because you don't think it will ever happen to you. We call those people victims.
Our Response to Active Shooter instructors are all nationally renowned tactical law enforcement experts who will guide you through the life-saving protocols you'll need to survive an active shooter event.
So be a victor, not a victim. Go to ResponseToActiveShooter.com to learn more today.
Remember, that's all one word, ResponseToActiveShooter.com, and be safe out there. Well, you know, we were talking about that instructor, Jackson Kernian, talking about, you know, people are not pro-city people, and they've moved and they live in rural America and everything like that. So I thought, you know, and you always come up with lists. So this is my
You're going to copy me.
Yeah, I am. I'm going to steal your thunder here. But I want to talk about a list, and I just got this just the other day, and it's the 10 top states that people are moving out of and why those people are moving out of those states. And I thought this state would be much, much higher, but it's our former state of California. And in the last year, there has been a 54% increase in the amount of people that are moving out of California over the 2017.
That's a lot of increase.
Okay. So, exactly. Okay, so actually from 2016 to 2017. So now we have the 2017 to 2018 stats. And so between the year before last, we've seen a 54% increase in people bailing out of the state of California.
Well, I want to say something real quick about that, because yesterday we spent the day with a lady that now lives in Las Vegas who left California. And she said, her comment was, you know, I know so many people leaving. I mean, who's going to be left? Who's going to be left to pay the taxes? Because the only people that are going to be left are the people that are the illegals and the people who are lower income who are not leaving because, you know, they can get help. But all the people that are making the money are leaving. What's going to happen? Well, and we said, we all wonder about that.
Well, yeah. And what's happening in the state of California, for people that don't know, is that it's becoming a two-tiered society, just like any socialist country
sure.
is. And that's why we kind of joke around and we refer to California as Calisuela. Because you're only going to have, if this just keeps up, you're only going to have the very, very rich that can insulate themselves with wealth. Okay,
mm-hmm.
and property. And then you're going to have the people on entitlements and the very poor and the people on fixed income like retired people. Most of the people that we talk to that are our age would love to move out of California, but they have grandkids, okay? We don't. We have a grand dog. But but we were lucky enough to have at least half of our family, half of our kids move out and live almost next door to us. So that's been a blessing for us. But let me talk about California, which is number 10 out of the 10 top states. 41% of the people are leaving California to find better jobs.
Oh, really? Okay.
20 and there, you know, there's employment in California, but here's the deal. That California is so expensive. It's not that they don't have a job. It's that California is so expensive that even if your job is fairly well-paying job, let's just say a job like it's a $100,000 job, you can't live there. You have to rent unless you have a house already that maybe your parents willed you or you got a really bottom basement house or you bought many years ago. The second thing is housing. So 25% are leaving because they literally can't afford to buy a house or to live in a house, even a rental house in California.
Well, an apartment costs more than most people's house payment across
exactly.
the country.
Exactly.
So, I mean, and I'm not talking about an apartment in Beverly Hills. I'm talking about an apartment in, you know, just some normal city or even low-end city.
Right.
They're just too expensive.
And then we knew this, okay, the retirees, 22% are leaving or left the state of California. 22% of those people were retirees because they're on fixed income.
And they tax the state tax is very high there.
Exactly.
And they tax their income where they can actually have more money in their hands if they leave California.
So the next one, we have a tie for position number 9, and that is Michigan and Montana. Now,
wow,
it's interesting.
I'm surprised.
You're surprised about Montana,
yeah,
aren't you?
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, people love Montana and they want to move mm-hmm. to Montana. Okay. But anyway, so that's number 9, Michigan and Montana. And they had pretty much the same reasons for pulling out of those two states. Number 1 was jobs. Okay. Because they don't have a lot of jobs in Montana and they don't have enough jobs in Michigan. All right. And number 2, to be close to family members. They want to be closer to family members. And here's something that's really interesting. People moving out of Montana because of the lack of doctors. there's not enough doctors in Montana. And they did a statistical survey, and they found that there's, on average, throughout the state of Montana, there's only 2 doctors per 1,000 people.
And what do you think is going to happen with Medicare for All?
Oh, my God.
How's that going to go?
I know, exactly
now,
right.
Interesting that my dermatologist is going to move up to Montana and open an additional office.
Well, she's smart.
He is smart, and it's for that reason, is that they don't have enough doctors.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to get through these a little bit quicker, okay? So number 8 is Iowa. So they've seen a 56% increase over the previous year of people leaving Iowa. And here's one that's not a surprise, bad weather, okay? Iowa's got horrible weather, okay? And then it's a high cost of living and for young people. So young people are moving out of the state of Iowa. Number 7 is Massachusetts. Again, the state that doesn't surprise me, 57% increase over the previous year. And the primary reason are high cost of living and a lack of good jobs.
And weather.
And a little bit of weather. Number 6, Ohio, 56% increase over last year.
I'm surprised there.
Well, here's the deal. They want better jobs. Ohio apparently has very high unemployment, and then the taxes are horrible, and retirees are feeling all of that, those high taxes, and they're moving out of the state. Kansas is number 5, 59% increase, 59% over the previous year, and the number one reason, 64% of all the people that had bailed out of Kansas is for jobs, because they don't have enough jobs and are not enough high-paying jobs.
Well, they just elected a Democratic governor, so I think that they're going to have even more problems there.
Right. And number 4, and here's another one that's not a surprise whatsoever, and that's the state of New York. And a 62% increase over the previous year, and they're stating some of the highest taxes in the country. There's not enough jobs. And out of New York City, this is interesting, 300 people a day leave the city of New York. Okay. Number 3 is Connecticut. Not another surprise there, because it's a 62% increase, high taxes, bad roads, and bad bridges was interesting. It's the only state that said that, and retirees moving out. Number 2, Illinois, not a surprise, 66% increase, poor economy, high taxes, very high taxes, and no jobs. And they have the second highest property taxes in the United States, and the number one state that people are pulling out of with a 67% increase over the previous year is New Jersey, and they've got no jobs, high taxes, and retirees make up the majority of the people that are moving out of that state.
It'd be interesting to know, and I can tell you the most of those, but there's a couple that I don't know off the top of my head. How many of those states are run by Democrats? And it's almost all of those.
Yes, that's correct. Yeah. Almost every single one of those states.
So I don't know if that tells people anything, but it certainly speaks to me that, you know, maybe the Republicans run the states a little bit better. And they're the states that people are moving to. The number one state, I think, that people are moving to, unfortunately, is Texas.
Well, you know, it's interesting because I looked at an article that followed up on these states. Mm-hmm. And of the people that moved out of California last year, 86% of those people went to Texas.
Yeah.
86%.
Yeah, unfortunately, they're bringing their blue politics to Texas, which is very frustrating. If they left a state because of how the Democrats have destroyed it, why don't they leave their politics at home and try ours, because ours works? Anyway, same situation in New Jersey and New York, and really California, is that people are leaving those, especially high income people, because of the high taxes. And what happens, Ron, is, you know, these governors, and we'll take those 3 in particular, and mayors that are running those cities and states, they're destroying their entire economy by doing this, because they think that they're gaining a bunch of money and we can put it in the coffers and help everybody else. But what happens is you chase those people away, then you have nothing. Now, New York is in a huge shortfall in their budget money, billions of dollars, because over a thousand of their millionaire billionaires left.
Yeah, 1,050 just last year alone.
And they moved most of them to Florida to avoid the taxes. So what you do, and Gavin Newsom's doing the same thing in California. He's ruining the state because you're overtaxing everybody, and he can't find enough ways to tax people. So he's looking at Proposition 13. They're property tax, trying to get some money back there. He's looking at different ways of getting money, and he's chasing people from the state that are the ones that are supporting the state.
Yeah, and for people that, you know, that don't know, I mean, you know, Proposition 13 was a very famous proposition in California because property taxes are 1% of the total purchase mm-hmm. price of the residence. And so that's a really good thing for property owners in California. But they're looking at trying to get rid of that. And if they do, there's going to be a major exodus out of the state of California because people just simply can't afford to live there. And, you know, speaking about people that left New York, there a couple of billionaires have recently left New York, and one was Donald Trump. So, you know, the thing that I want to say is not only do you lose that tax base from a guy like Donald Trump and Trump Industries or Trump International, whatever, but look at all – when you pull out of there and you pull your employees out of there, look at the all the different small businesses that support these big companies that they can't afford to be there anymore
because
you've lost that that business base.
Yeah,
right.
He still has his hotel and everything.
Oh, yeah, sure. He won't do that. He won't get rid of that.
But he moved personally. You know, and you're right. And then you have an Ocasio-Cortez who disses Amazon coming there, and then they don't come there.
Well, 28,000 jobs they lost.
Yeah, so all those other people don't have jobs. So these governors and mayors of these states are absolutely ruining the state for the future. It's going to take a very long time to rebuild those states because you're going to lose all the people that make the money. You're going to be left with the people that don't have any money. The state's not going to be able to have any money then. How are they going to provide the services? And, you know, this is just economics 101. And anybody can see this. Sit down and do your own math with your own accounting at home. You can see that this doesn't work. So why do you vote these people in that have these kinds of policies?
Well, you know, you're absolutely right. And an excellent example is somebody that you just brought up, and that's Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who was broke, nearly bankrupt, has a horrible credit score, probably better now that she, you know, now that she's in a good position. But she was only a bartender, so she doesn't understand socioeconomics. You know, she doesn't understand finance. She doesn't understand anything. What committee do you think they put her on? They put her on the finance committee for the Congress.
Yeah.
I mean, absolutely
somebody
amazing.
Somebody that can't handle their own checkbook.
And somebody that cost in her own district 28,000 jobs.
Right.
So you and I have talked about this. It doesn't matter whether it's municipal, state, local, federal government. We tend to take people that we wouldn't trust to park our car or walk our dog and have terrible bank accounts themselves, right? You don't know anything about money. And we take these people and we entrust them with some of the most important critical financial positions that we have in government.
Well, you know, Ron, you and I were talking about the people that we meet here at PBR, Middle America people, and all the people that we've talked to here think that this whole impeachment thing is a big sham and that Schiff is shifty and that that they're just trying to railroad the president. It's very interesting. It's a very pro-Trump crowd. Not all of them, but a lot of them. And so I want to talk about Schiff because some things have happened since we've talked about him last, which are that they had a hearing and they had a decision that the Republicans could be involved. So they did the whole formal impeachment thing, but not really because it wasn't a fair hearing type of thing. They gave Schiff all the power of who can show up and who can't. And he has the right to tell the Republicans who they can call as witnesses. I mean, how ludicrous is that?
Well, it's not only ludicrous, it's dictatorial. Okay, so it's a dictatorship. So you got one guy basically controlling everything that's going on in this so-called impeachment inquiry. Now, Nancy Pelosi is simply the spokeshole as Speaker of the House, right? She's just the spokeshole for whatever Adam Schiff does. But Adam Schiff is really the dictator. So recently, with respect to this so-called whistleblower, who's just actually a leaker, he has denied the GOP request that the whistleblower appear for public hearings. And the next thing that he's done is told the GOP to forget about their witness list. So basically, this is a Democratic-run sham.
Oh, exactly. For them to not have the Republicans allowed to have the people that they want in to interview, I mean, how do you even call that a fair process? And this, speaking of this whistleblower was somebody that worked for a Democrat that has a huge history of being anti-Trump.
Well, what were you going to say? No, I was just going to say, you're exactly right. Okay, he's an Obama appointee, all right, as opposed to a career-long federal employee. He's an Obama appointee who's in the CIA. So he's working with James Clapper. Okay, and Brennan, all right, in the intelligence community. He was an Obama person. He's linked to Biden, and obviously he's been linked to Schiff. And Schiff, Adam Schiff was not truthful whatsoever with respect to his staff's relationship with this whistleblower.
Well, and what's happening is you're having people come out of the woodwork that are people that have a bone to pick with Trump, so they want to get him back. I mean, this was all set up. And when you have this whistleblower's attorney coming out and saying years ago that the coup was starting against Trump and that they were going to get him impeached, I mean, that should tell people all that they need to know. This is not about what Trump said to the president of Ukraine. And the reason it's not is the president of Ukraine said that there was no quid pro quo. End of story there. Unless he thinks that there wasn't.
Right. And they weren't even aware. He's already said, the president of Ukraine has already said that he wasn't even aware that money was being withheld. Okay? Wasn't even aware.
Right. So you cannot have the type of crime that they're saying. I mean, it's end of story. But What they're doing now is they're controlling the narrative. They're controlling only what people hear and only what people think. And this manipulation of Americans' thoughts and minds is just despicable. It's wag the dog to me. It's not a fair process, and they are being totally dishonest. If you want it to be honest, bring everything out.
No, I agree entirely. How about our last cup of coffee?
You got it.
Spreading the out loud truth from sea to shining sea. AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world. To unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. We are the vision of the voices. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Well, hotel coffee is never good as at-home coffee, but it's better than nothing. You wrote a really good article, Ron, on the cartels called An Argument for Redefining Drug Cartels as International Terrorist Groups, and it's on America Out Loud. And then you did a show on it as well. And I just think it's really a fascinating subject right now with what just happened in northern Mexico.
Yeah, with the LeBaron family, that Mormon family that has lived in northern Mexico, just about 70 miles from the border. I think they live in a small town, or they did, named El Mora, about 70 miles outside of Douglas, Arizona. And obviously this entire family was slaughtered.
Oh, my gosh,
so it's just horrible. Innocent women, and small children just slaughtered by what we believe pretty much is going to be one of the more violent offshoots of one of the violent drug cartels that run Mexico. You know, these transnational drug and human trafficking organizations that have killed tens of thousands of people in Mexico alone, I mean, a year. And so I was writing the article because people, of course, this always gets an emotional response, and because it's so tragic and so senseless. And of course, President Trump reached out to President Obrador and said, "Hey, look, we're here for you, and why don't you allow America to help you, and we can fight these drug cartels." Well, Obrador is sort of a different cat. So he's very popular.
Yes.
We have our friends in Mexico, and we've done a couple of Talking While Married shows there, and he's extremely popular. He's a populist president. Used to be the mayor of Mexico City. That's his claim to fame, which catapulted him into the president's position. And before that, I think he had an academic background. So he's got more of a liberal attitude of looking at things. And he's got a philosophy that's just been a horrible, ineffective philosophy called hugs, not bullets.
Right.
So he wants to sort of placate these drug lords. And you just can't do that with these people.
No, you can't do that. And, you know, this, to me, first of all, it was a horrible tragedy. But here's where common sense has to come in with the American people. If we had a wall, if everybody had to come over the border through a port of entry, and those port of entries were policed very well, and we didn't have to police this whole entire border and spread everybody out, these drugs that fuel these cartels would not be getting over the border in the same manner as they are now, which would, because everything's about money, right?
And
power and money.
There you go.
So if you had the wall, and if the human trafficking couldn't get over the border, if the drugs could not as easily get over the border, you would not have these cartels the same way that you have them now. So this always goes to my question of, you know, what is your end game here? Because if you're somebody that opposes the wall on some philosophical crazy reason about, oh, you know, we're all people, and no, you need to stop the drugs
and the people,
and you will stop a lot of these problems, a lot of the problems that happen in the United States with illegals, and a lot of the problems that also happen in Mexico with cartels. You will stop it.
Well, you know, one of the things that I said, and I do thank you for mentioning the article, and I hope people will read this article. It's on the top of the platform on AmericaOutloud.com. And I said, look, it's time to just reconsider these drug cartels and to define them as terrorist organizations. And people usually think about terrorist organizations as committing acts of terrorism for political gain. That's not the only reason. And actually, if you look at the better definition, and I provided the legal definition in the article, you'll see that they're also the objective of social change. And so social change could be getting everybody addicted to drugs, getting political leaders to decriminalize gateway drugs such as marijuana. And because, you know, the Mexican cartel marijuana is a hell of a lot more potent than the marijuana that they grow in, you know, California and Colorado and some of these other states. And that's why there still is a black market with this. And then obviously the whole issue of synthetic opioids like fentanyl that they're bringing in, you know, by the barrel loads.
That are killing our children.
Yeah, and just to let people know, with respect to the United States, just between, in the 2017 year, we lost 70,200 people from a decade ago. Okay, so that's a twofold increase from just a decade ago. And just fentanyl kills 28,400 400 people a year. That was in 2017. 20,400 people. Now, just compare this, just for a second, to wrap your arms around this for a minute. The Vietnam War lasted 15 years. We lost about 58,000 American military personnel over 15 years. Just this one drug has killed half that many people in 1 year. And you get an idea of what I'm talking about how serious this problem is.
And it's so interesting how they're always against the Second Amendment for guns, yet nobody's fighting this. And you have some fairly easy solutions to this.
Sure. You know, it's a multifaceted thing. You got to hit them politically, you got to hit them economically, and you got to hit them militarily. But the thing, and you brought it up, and I'm glad you did, because these politicians, and I don't care where they come from, these politicians that forward the philosophy of we don't need a wall, let's have open borders, let's have sanctuary states, let's have sanctuary cities, let's not cooperate with ICE and Border Patrol and DHS, and Elizabeth Warren coming out just very recently saying, if I'm elected president, I'm going to put a stop on deportations.
And she's going to give Medicare to all the illegal right. aliens but, so that we can pay for it.
But the point is that I'm raising is that when you are dumb, okay, so you are unwitting, you're uninformed, and you want to forward all of these things, the open borders, the dissolving of ICE, and all these people that protect us, you help the cartels. You become a partner to the cartels to kill tens of thousands of Mexicans and tens of thousands of Americans, because we have a blended, between Mexico and the United States, we have a blended community.
You also become an accomplice in child trafficking.
Oh, absolutely.
And that is such a serious problem. And I think that what I see, Ron, whenever I try to talk about child trafficking, and you know this, I'm very passionate about it, and people don't want to talk about it. They want to hide it under the rug. It's an uncomfortable subject, but it's real and it happens every day. And if that's your child, you know, you just cannot look away from this. And to what end would you not build a wall and protect children, our children, or Mexican children, whosever children they are, it doesn't matter. How could you not protect our children from the drugs and from the trafficking and from the violence from these people? And again, if they don't have the rewards from their violence, they will have to do something else.
No, exactly right. And you know, you and I were having a discussion just the other night, and you brought up the point that, you know, we need to really out more of these politicians, and we need to take them on, because you can't get a straight answer out of any of them.
Oh, no.
And that's the problem with the media. And I'm talking even conservative media. So, like, you know, Fox News, they get a politician on that's a liberal politician, and they'll ask him a few questions. And, you know, of course, they have that Mexican guy that comes on from Telemundo every once in a while who's totally open borders and this and that. They need to say, do you understand that when you are acting this way and you're proposing this legislation and you're forwarding this legislation, you are enabling and empowering these drug cartels to kill tens of thousands of us, including, you know, children and our teens and the poor people in Mexico? You're contributing to that, and I want a straight answer from you, because, like you said, Linda, you know, what's the end game here? What is it all about? Is it Trump derangement syndrome? What is it? Or are they even smart enough to look globally, to look down the road, to see what these multinational drug cartel terrorist organizations are doing to Mexico and the United States, and also to countries internationally? Because they traffic to Europe, they traffic to Asia, they traffic all over
yes.
the globe.
Yeah, and you know, it's the same to me with sanctuary cities. When any sanctuary city to me is an abomination. We should not have sanctuary cities where we have illegal people or people here illegally that are protected. And especially, you know, we talked a few nights ago about Maryland, who is supposed to be cracking down on all these rapes and these child, they've had just a tremendous amount of child rapes there and by illegal aliens. Right. And ICE wants to pick them up, and they said no. Well, then they reversed themselves and said, well, you know, the problem's really getting bigger than we can handle, so we will reverse ourselves. In fact, that has been lip service, and they have not reversed themselves because their actions speak louder than their words. Therefore, they are allowing or participating in children being raped in Maryland. So how do you justify this, and how does any population in any of these cities that are sanctuary cities or sanctuary states allow their legislators to do this? This is criminal to me.
No, you know, I entirely, you know, agree with what you're saying. You know, for instance, one of the things that we could do in the United States that our Do Nothing Congress is not doing at all, and in this bill, it has been ready to be passed for well over a year, and that's the MCUSA.
Yes,
You know, the big tri-country trade bill between,
yes,
Canada, the United States, and Mexico. And with our relationship in Mexico, this would bring tens of thousands of jobs to Mexico and increase their coffer by tens of billions of dollars a year. So one of the things that you really want to do, and it's been talked about by criminologists and economists for years, if you can make Mexico a richer nation and make its people richer, if you can provide them with jobs and things like that, there's just a much less of a tendency to want to self-medicate and use drugs. So you bring up the Mexican economy, you bring up the American economy, and that's one of the ways that you fight these drug cartels economically. And our Do Nothing Congress will not pass this critical bill that helps all three countries, but especially the United States and Mexico, because they don't want to give the President of the United States a victory in trade.
Well, and again, that hurts. Our Congress hurts all of us. They're hurting all of us in this country. This next vote to me, Ron, is so important because you really see where the rubber hits the road here with what the legislators do and what they don't do. And you have a Congress that is focused solely on Trump derangement syndrome and not focused on doing the business of this country and doing the things that will help people, because they feel, as you said, that it's going to give Trump a win. That shouldn't even be in their mind. It should simply be they can tout that they did it. You know, let them take the credit. I don't care. But get it done, and they're getting nothing done. And when we talk to people here, where we have thousands of people from all over the country, but a lot of people from Middle America, they feel the same way. They're very frustrated with the Congress and the fact that they do nothing.
Well, I'd like to change it up. And I think that was a great discussion, by the way, on cartels and terrorism and everything. Let's talk about the Austin, Texas Independent School District. And it's so embarrassing because we're from Texas, and people always sort of consider Texas to be a fairly conservative state. But it is kind of turning, unfortunately, purple. And Austin, Texas, which is where our state's capital is in Texas, is like the People's Republic of Berkeley.
Yes.
There, okay?
So any place, call it the People's Republic of Austin.
That's exactly right. And any place where you have a university, you're going to have that type of environment, which is very embarrassing because our administration is Republican. Greatly beloved Governor Greg Abbott is there, plus our lieutenant governor and our attorney general, all Republican conservatives. But anyway, so the Austin ISP, the Independent School District, has decided to change the way that they present sex education to the students, and they're getting into some really dangerous, weird areas that parents have been up at arms about, but the school district has passed it anyway. So they're getting into the whole LGBTQ issues, transgender, cis, all these different words. I'm telling you, some of them are difficult for me. I had to actually look them up because I didn't understand, you know, some of these names and what they meant. And boy, I'll tell you what, with a guy, if a guy with a PhD doesn't know this stuff, how the heck is a 6, 7, 8-year-old, 10-year-old kid supposed to understand this stuff? But a couple of things really scared me, and I'm going to point out a couple of things to you. Number one, they are teaching the kids not to call their parents by mom and dad, my mother, my father. They are telling the kids that those are politically incorrect terms to use. And you can say my parents, or they want them to be genderless. So there is no references to mom and dad and things like this. They are teaching kids about anal sex. They are teaching
from
kids
kindergarten
up. I mean, the stuff that they are teaching is, I mean, to me, it's horrific. And it's also because, you know, my background's in forensic psych. I do not want children at that tender age where they don't know anything. These are innocent kids. And now you are confusing and conflicting them and going into areas where I think the schools have no business being. These are parental issues. And by the way, I started out as a high school teacher, and I started out even in middle school teaching. And what do you think I taught? I taught one of the classes I had to teach was sex education. And I'm telling you what, it was so different and so better back then. We just kept it, you know, birds and bees, and then that was it. And mostly it was about hygiene, you know, in those days. Now they're going into these areas that I just don't feel that the school district has a right to tread, and it's not their job. And I just wanted to hear your opinion on that.
You know, I mean, I'm totally on the same page. I can't be more disgusted and insulted by this. As a parent, I would have taken the kids out of school. I would not let them go to those classes. And I do understand that people, after complaining, they were given the option to opt out, but they have to do it by a certain time, and which is months ahead of the education. So, then my question would be, how well are they going to communicate with them so that that happens? I agree with you. This is not the place of a school district to teach not to call your parents mom and dad or any of those types of things, or to teach this kind of sex education. These are things for parents to handle in the home.
Yeah, I agree with you entirely.
Well, you know what? We have one more Buck and Bull event to get to tonight. So let's get on the road and do it, and wish everybody safe and good luck tonight.
And I'm glad we're all coffeed up, because I'm energized to get to PBR.
Okay.